There's a reason that, like, until Tesla came about, you did not see a new car company in America in, like, 60 years or something.
Hello, and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. On this week's episode, we're talking about the latest on tariffs, a new startup making $25,000 EVs that's reportedly taking shape in America, and why China's BYD could be the real winner of Trump's trade war.
Yeah. This is the part of the show where, before we get into the matters of serious business deals, where we talk about more fun things like what we've been driving lately. I don't think you can talk about it yet, but you were just in the Lucid Gravity, like spending some real time with it. And is there anything you can tell our listeners about this vehicle?
I'm gonna play it safe and say no.
I tried,
but stay tuned. Yeah, the Gravity, I think, is a really cool vehicle, as we've talked about before. I did drive it. Like, people who have been listening to the show for a while will know I got to drive it a little bit a little while ago, just for like a few minutes. And yeah, looking forward to updating everybody on like my full impressions of that thing. But yeah. Lucid's a really cool company making really cool cars. We reported this week on some charging tests that came out about the Gravity, were super, super impressive. Go check that out too. This thing is the fastest charging EV in terms of miles per minute you can get in America. It's a really cool product.
Fastest charging EV outside of China, right? Which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
America's back, baby. We're catching up. Look at us go, and it's what we do know about this. And, for if anyone has not been following that news, Lucid has kind of done what it can with the Air sedan, which is like one of our favorite cars, but people aren't buying sedans anymore. So the Gravity SUV is a really big deal for them. And it's like Tim said, this thing is probably going to be about as cutting edge as American electric vehicles get right now. What's the max range on it? I'm sorry to put you on the spot. Like, it's like 420 or something, isn't it?
No, it's like 450 miles or so. Yeah, that's the EPA. So that's like, better than almost anything else you can buy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this thing's going to be a monster. I'm excited to see your take on it, which will be on InsideEVs.com next week. And we'll probably discuss it on the show, too. Exciting.
Last week, you had just picked up the Volvo XC90 PHEV. What's your take on that after driving it for a week?
Yeah, this is like this car's kind of funny because at first Volvo said, they're going to phase out their gas cars, and like the EX90, the big electric SUV, that's the future. That's what we're going to go with. And that got delayed a whole bunch, and EV sales haven't taken off as quickly as everybody thought. So they're like, oh crap, like our best selling SUV, like update it, like make it better for 2025 and put it back on sale. And, it's a testament to how good that car, the XC90, always was, because even with some like light updates, it doesn't feel outdated at all. It's really nice. It's very powerful. The tech is great. It's one of those Google-based systems, so you can ask Google like anything you want all of the time, which I kind of abuse quite a bit. But I didn't love the fact that it's a plug-in hybrid. And I hate to be like that guy in the EV podcast, because we're pro hybrid around here, and I recommend hybrids to people all the time. But like, just for me personally, I didn't love that I had an SUV that I had to put $60 worth of premium gas into and plug in at the same time. I was like, God, this kind of sucks. Like, I just rather this thing be full electric at this point. So that's my take on that. But there are lots of people that swear by their plug-in hybrids. So, your mileage may vary, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Should we get into the news? Because we got a lot to cover.
Now that we've got the fun stuff out of the way, looks like we're back to talking tariffs, right?
Yeah, we do have to talk about it, unfortunately. I don't know. Maybe there will be someday when, like, this is all behind us. For now, it is very much not. The entire car industry's plans are up in the air right now. That includes everything we talk about, plans for the future, electrification, autonomy, software. These tariffs are going to impact all of that kind of stuff. And frankly, like where the cars that all that technology goes into, like where those cars get made and how much they can be sold for and how profitable they are. So we've got to talk about it. Patrick, what have you been hearing or what have you been thinking?
I have lots of thoughts. No, fun fact, like about 15 minutes before Tim and I sat down to record this, President Trump announced a 90-day pause on tariffs, and we were scrambling to find out if that included cars or not, including just calling like literally all of our industry contacts. And I called the Commerce Department too and left a voicemail and sent an email. They haven't gotten back to me yet, so I hope they do. But as of right now, we believe that cars are still going to be included on the tariffs, even though other ones have been paused. Though by Friday, by the time you hear this, that might have changed, and that's out of my control. So sorry about that. So, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me lately, whether it's like industry folks or even just friends who are trying to buy a new car, like what's going to happen? And the best answer I have is hell if I know. This could be a permanent shift in how car importing works, like President Trump has said, or we could just be a temporary thing while we're fishing for better deals with these countries, which President Trump has also said. So we have some buying advice we're going to get into here, but for now, like this is just really minute by minute, day by day, and what it's going to mean for the car industry. But you want to give us a recap on where we're at now, Tim?
Yeah. So like Patrick said, just kind of minutes before we started recording this on Wednesday, President Trump truthed. I think that's what you call it. He posted.
I think it is called truthing.
Yeah.
Because you also retruth. So you have to truth first before you can retruth.
Yeah. He posted to his social media platform, Truth Social, this really long post about basically imposing new, bigger tariffs on China, but also rolling back a lot of the reciprocal tariffs or pausing the reciprocal tariffs on other countries for 90 days. That does not include, as far as we can tell, the tariffs that he already imposed on foreign autos and auto parts. That's 25% tariffs on all imported cars that went into effect last week and imported car parts that goes into effect next month.
Yeah. So like everybody in the auto industry who was trying to breathe a sigh of relief all of a sudden was just like, no, like keep that sigh for later. It's too soon. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So it seems like the car tariffs are still in effect. And we've already been seeing the kind of fallout from that. And it's been interesting to see how differently all the automakers have been responding. You know, I think over the long term, it's going to be bad news generally for these companies, as we've discussed, like higher input costs, higher prices, just, you know, lower revenues, lower manufacturing levels. It's going to be bad news. But
yeah,
for now, Toyota, Honda, and Hyundai all say they are not raising their prices for now. Ford announced that it was extending employee pricing to all customers through the beginning of June in kind of probably like a smart, I think, show of, you know, goodwill to customers and showing like, hey, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean you won't be able to buy our cars, right? Like we're going to get you in under the, I don't know, what do you call it? Get you in before the tariffs really start impacting things. Like we're going to keep those prices low. Stellantis did a similar thing, but also furloughed around 900 workers in the U.S. And then a bunch of car companies have also halted their imports to this country. That includes Volkswagen, Audi, Jaguar Land Rover, Lotus. Those are all, you know, paused right now. And then the last one I'll mention is the Polestar 2. We've seen is no longer available to configure on Polestar's site. That's a Chinese-made car that, you know, it was already tariffed by these tariffs that the Biden administration put on Chinese EVs. Now it has even higher tariffs. So it's not surprising to see that that car is kind of being sidelined in favor of something like the Polestar 3, their crossover that is made in America.
Yeah, and you can obviously still buy any Pulsar 2 that's in stock, those sedans.
Yeah.
I don't think they're letting people configure new ones right now. But also, like, that's been on sale for years, so it's not going to impact you too much. But no, it's real wacky. So a bunch of these cars that are being held up at port now, the foreign-made ones, that does include EVs, obviously, like Volkswagen ID4, that's made in Tennessee, that's fine, but like an Audi Q6 e-tron, which is made in Germany, like that's going to be held up until like they know how to price it. So it's pretty disruptive overall, and it's kind of a bummer for Volkswagen because it just had a great first quarter. Like, they announced that like their electric car sales in Europe are way up. Sold something in the neighborhood, let me get the exact number here, 218,000 EVs worldwide, you know, which is like about 100,000 short of Tesla, but like it's actually doing really well. And Volkswagen is taking a lot of Tesla buyers, as we'll discuss. So like this tariff stuff is going to be kind of disruptive for momentum here. But I do have a theory about what they mean for the current like buying environment, which is that I think right now is a really good time to be buying a used EV. And let me explain why. It's that, you know, this may be kind of a silly thing to say, but I've gotten this question a lot, is like, am I going to have to pay a tariff on like a used car? So, well, no, if the car's already imported here, if it's already here, there's no tariff to pay because that's an import tax. And we know that, you know, EVs have dropped in value pretty dramatically, and there's a lot of them on the market now, a lot of like this sort of new generation of cars that are kind of coming off leases for the first time. And what I mean to say is, like, you can get, like, a great Ford Mustang Mach-E or Volkswagen ID.4 or a Hyundai Ioniq 5 or Kia EV6 for, like, 26, 30, 35, well under 40. And that's before the $4,000 EV tax credit, which still exists right now. So, like, I think a lot of car prices are going to get weird and crazy. They're going to go up. New car prices will go up. Used cars will probably go up too. But if you're looking for like a used EV, like now's probably a really good time to do that, especially these ones that are, like I said, like off lease. So you're talking 20,000 miles, 30,000 miles on. Like that's a new car. So like that's, I think that's the deal to beat right now. But that could change like everything else. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right about that. I think what's important to know is like whatever prices you see right now, especially for used cars and new cars, those probably will go up. And as the new car prices go up, the used car prices will also do the same. So if you are looking to get a deal on a used EV, like act sooner rather than later on that.
Yeah.
I think in terms of the other, like, I mean, we talked last week sort of about the winners and losers of this. I think another winner on top of used EVs is probably Ford is actually in a pretty good position here. About 80% of their sales in the U.S. are made in the U.S. So they, you know, even if those cars have foreign parts, like that's a pretty good position they're in. I think Tesla could have been a big winner. You know, yeah. they also make all the cars they sell in America in America. They could have just like run away with this moment and been like, hell yeah, bitches, like all our cars are made in America. Like they're great EVs. They're made here. They're not going to have huge tariffs on them. Like come
that's,
on down.
That's still true, but now it has other problems because of Elon. Like its sales are tanking for reasons unrelated to tariffs. It's like if he had
completely
kept his mouth shut and not done the Doge thing, like they probably would have been sitting pretty right now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And instead, you have, you know, Elon Musk, admirably, I think, because this is something that really hits all the car companies, is talking about how bad this is for Tesla. Like he's not just lining up. This is like one of the very few things where he's not just like lining up behind the administration on. He has been out there calling, I think it was Peter Navarro. He's been out there calling Trump's kind of trade advisor, like a whole bunch of names. I think he called them like dumb as a bag of rocks.
They're getting like a
Twitter
calling match as like grown men. It's kind of hilarious to watch, honestly.
Yeah.
That's a weird one though. Just to make a very quick aside, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, When does the political capital that Elon spent on Trump pay off, right? Because there was also this New York Times article the other day. It was like all of these tech titans who donated money to Trump's campaign or came to Mar-a-Lago, the White House, to be like, we really want to work with you. Like, they kind of just, you know, showed fealty here. And it hasn't paid off for any of them yet. Like, there's not really been any tangible benefits. Like, there's still an antitrust lawsuit against Meta that's coming up. Like, that's not going anywhere. Elon Musk has warned of tariffs hurting his business at Tesla, and he's obviously done a lot for Trump. So now the question is, like, okay, we did a lot for this president. Like, where's the ROI on that? And that's what a lot of businesses and CEOs are wondering today, seems like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the way that these tariffs just like erased $6 or $7 trillion from the stock market, including from a lot of those big tech companies, Facebook and Google,
yeah,
and Apple. So far, it has not been working out. Although then today, after that pause, stocks are like surging. So
yeah,
we'll have to see.
Happy days are here again, baby, kind of, sort of. And again, the way that the attack we always take on this stuff is like, it affects an industry that's trying to transition from gas-powered cars to electric and software-driven ones. And I think the last time we saw something this disruptive, it was probably COVID, honestly. And like 5 years ago, like the EV race, the software race, the tech race was very different than it is now. Like, that was really like the earliest possible days. And now they're just dumping money into autonomy and batteries and all the things that they think will secure the future. And like, this is such a disruptor to everything that we cover and everything that I think that these listeners on this podcast like care about. So it's a really wacky and weird moment that is going to have effects on everything.
I think like one thing that I'll note is like, it's not just about EVs. It's not just about the fact that, okay, these tariffs will like hurt, you know, sales of EVs because they'll be more expensive to import or make or whatever. It's also the fact that like these companies like Ford and GM, they are subsidizing all this EV development by selling gas cars and trucks and making like heaps of cash off of that they can then like funnel back into the development of EVs and autonomy. And like, when suddenly your Ford F-150 or your, you know, Chevy Silverado is no longer like that cash cow it was because you're just absolutely slammed by tariffs on Mexican and Canadian parts and stuff like that, that's really, I think, going to dent, dent these businesses and dent their ability to invest in the future.
Yeah. And as we've said before, I think everybody would agree that like more American jobs, more American manufacturing, all a good thing, but it's like that takes years to happen and scale up. It does not happen overnight. So, fun times, Tim, and we're not done yet, but clearly, you know, the party keeps going. We found a little bit more this week about a very exciting potential new entry into the space. You want to take us through what we know there?
Yeah, a new American EV startup is taking shape with backing from Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. That's a report from TechCrunch's Sean O'Kane from this week. The company is called Slate. And according to the report, it's working on a $25,000 two-seat pickup truck. It's raised $111 million through a Series A funding round, and it's hired industry vets from Harley-Davidson, Ford, General Motors, Stellantis, and I'm sure others. It hopes to get its vehicle in production as soon as late 2026, according to the report, and it'll have a manufacturing facility somewhere near Indianapolis. Patrick, top line thoughts on this. Is there a market for a $25,000 two-seat EV pickup? Like, I think what's cool about this, and like, I'm excited to learn more over time,
yeah,
as this company comes out of stealth, is like, this is not a company making a $75,000 EV crossover, you know? Like, this is kind of something, it's a type of EV startup that's kind of rare.
Oh yeah, extremely. No, this is super interesting, and I'll preface this by saying like we do expect to learn more about this company over the coming weeks, but like the idea is really wild. I mean, I think that they have the right idea for everything we've heard, and there's not a lot we know like concrete right now, right? But like coming out and trying to do a super affordable electric car in America. Like, that's right where the growth segment is. That's where EVs need to go next. The whole market is sick of super expensive cars. They're people are over it. They can. I saw the other day that like 84 month car loans have hit a record high, and like my heart goes out to anybody that had to do that. I'm so sorry. But I think that this whole country just needs cheaper options, right? And if you do that in the electric space, at a time when people like want to break up with gasoline, if you give them the tools to do that easily, this could do really well. Now, the tricky thing, right, is why didn't like Lucid come out with a cheap car out of the gate? Why didn't Rivian do it? Why didn't Tesla do it back in the day? Because they all have to start with expensive cars that are hopefully super profitable, and then they build up their scale to the point where they can make these cheap cars, right? Because when you're selling cars in this industry, you make your money off of like profit margins, you know, selling a small amount of really expensive cars that are highly profitable, or you sell a ton of cheap cars that are kind of modestly profitable, right? I don't think that the United States has ever really seen a car startup trying to take the second approach. Maybe Coda, if anyone remembers that, like a decade and a half ago, which kind of looked like it was kind of this Toyota Corolla-looking electric thing that startup fizzled. So I don't know. It's a crazy idea, but maybe this space is getting mature enough now. Maybe like battery costs are going down, and there's enough companies that can supply things like electric motors. Maybe there's enough of this ecosystem out there that you can do a car that's like 25 grand and has pretty good electric specs. And then again, this is going to depend on like what's the battery like, what's the range going to be like, what's it going to look like. We don't know any of that stuff yet, but yeah. It's theoretically possible. Just like a lot of ifs here.
Yeah, I think we know from covering this industry that it is tough. It is really tough to build a new car company from scratch. And I think that the starting low end is obviously has its benefits. Like you have a higher, you know, you have a bigger addressable market, right? They're just like simply more people that are willing to buy a $25,000 car than there are willing to buy a $50,000 or $75,000 truck. Like coming in at 25 grand with a pickup truck could be a huge deal when like a Ford F-150 Lightning costs you like 70 plus grand. An R1T, a Rivian R1T costs you like 70 plus grand. Like this is something that just like doesn't exist. Barely even exists in the combustion car market. Like a $25,000 car is like kind of doesn't like it's just not really a thing anymore.
It's like the Nissan Versa, I think, and maybe that Kia K4, that really good looking gas sedan that they make, and that's about it these days. It's crazy how expensive stuff has gotten.
Yeah. So I think it'll be tough. I think it'll be really tough for the reasons you said too, like. The reason that these car companies generally start with a high-end model is like when you're Tesla and you start out with a Tesla Roadster that costs like $100,000 plus, like you don't need that many people to buy one in order to kind of keep some cash flowing in. When it's a new company selling a $25,000 car, it's like you need a lot of people to buy that thing to just like sustain your business. It's just a tough time, I think, to start an EV startup. Like, we're bullish on this space. I think that we believe that, like, the technology of electrification of EVs is going to win out over the long term. Like, there are going to be more and more EVs sold and fewer combustion cars sold. That said, like, growth in EVs has been slowing down. It's not as fast as it was when those startups like Lucid and Rivian put out their first products in 2021, right? So it's just like, yeah, it's a tough time to be an EV startup. And I think those companies like Lucid and Rivian, they have survived mostly because they have had backers that have been able to put billions and billions of dollars into them. And so $100 million Series A round, like that's great to get started, but over time, they're going to need a lot of money probably to pull this off.
Yeah. Like it's worth remembering, like, you know, it took a lot for Rivian to get to where it did. And like a big deal with Rivian is that software deal it has with Volkswagen. Like that's a huge lifeline for them and a real roadmap for their future. Lucid is heavily backed by, the Saudi Public Investment Fund,
think what you want about those folks. Like, they got deep pockets, right? So we'll see if Daddy Bezos is down to do the same level of support here. I don't know. I love that it's an American company, and I love that they're taking this moonshot approach, and I'm excited to hopefully see it in the coming weeks or months or whatever. But yeah, man, and as you noted too, it's just like, this is the EV startup world is kind of a graveyard. Like, it's like the track record's really not good. For every one Tesla, there's 10 other Fiskers, and it just any other number of examples of startups could pull it off.
Yeah, it's like, you know, just in the last kind of couple of years, and a lot of these happened pretty recently.
Yeah.
Nikola, the electric truck startup, filed for bankruptcy recently. They were going to make an electric pickup truck called the Badger. That kind of just like those plans kind of just like evaporated. Fisker, as we've done a lot of reporting on, went bankrupt last year. Proterra was an EV bus maker that was in business for like 20 years before having to declare bankruptcy. We have some companies that are just like can't really seem to get off the ground. Faraday Future is one that comes to mind. Like,
my God. Yeah.
They sell one car every like 6 months, and I don't really know how they're still in business. Lordstown was another electric pickup truck maker that kind of just started. It sold, or it's like just started manufacturing and then went bankrupt. So this is a tough space. You know, it requires a lot of time and a lot of investment. And then you need people to actually buy the damn things. Like, you need brand awareness out there for somebody to say, okay, I'm going to spend my $25,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 on a car
or more. I'm gonna, or $100,000.
Yeah, like, I think fundamentally it's just hard when it's like the proposition is make probably the second biggest purchase of your entire life behind a home, and decide to spend that money with a startup that has no history and you have no idea if it's going to exist in a few years. It's a tough sell.
Yeah. And I like Rivian a lot because it created products that are different in a lot of ways. But like Fisker, for example, I never understood why you'd buy that over like a Hyundai Ioniq 5 or even a Tesla Model Y. Like, it was just, I never saw some clear value proposition there too. Also, you brought up Faraday Future, and I laughed. I sometimes with that company feel like that Dr. Manhattan meme from Watchmen. Because every 5 years, I have to write or edit some story about how weird things are at that company, and it just never changes and never goes away ever. So that's one of the greatest running, according to some alleged scams in this business. But they're still at it, so we'll see. But then again, what's unique about this company, Slate, is like they do have a unique position in the market. They do have a value proposition. Like, nobody's doing $25,000 electric trucks, so maybe they'll pull it off, you know?
Totally. Yeah. All that said, I hope they can pull it off. It's a tough space. It's a lot tougher than, you know, building a software company or something. You have just so many costs. The supply chains are insane. There's a reason that, like, until Tesla came about, you did not see a new car company in America in like, you know, 60 years or something.
Yeah. The last before Tesla, the last surviving startup was Chrysler.
Right.
Yeah. Like that like survived to today. I mean, I know it makes like one minivan now, so define survive, but you get the idea of how hard this is. We'll see, man. I'm excited to see it. And speaking of startups and new players, I want to talk about BYD, because our readers at Inside EVs and our listeners to this podcast always get really hyped when we talk about BYD. And, you know, there is a non-zero chance that company is going to be the real winner in any sort of trade war or tariff fight that happens. That's me and Tim's working theory here. And they've had some good financial news lately. You want to talk about how BYD is doing these days?
Yeah. So BYD announced on Wednesday that it's expecting its net profit in the first quarter to be up, but somewhere between 86% and 119% compared with the first quarter last year. It's expecting to rake in up to $1.3 billion in net profit this quarter. And that's on top of, it recently reported 2024 revenue of over $100 billion for the first time. This is a company that's expanding all over the world while Tesla is shrinking. Like we said on last week's episode, BYD sold more EVs in March by a long shot than Tesla did all quarter. So this company has a lot of momentum, and I think more and more people kind of in the mainstream are realizing that. Why do you think they could win out in this trade war?
Yeah, BYD is interesting because it, especially in the Western press, like we're members of, it often gets mentioned in the same breath as Tesla. There are a lot of great up and coming Chinese car companies, but like that's kind of seen as like the big one, like the big daddy. Like this is the major power player. And there's often this question of like, okay, Tesla, like what are you doing to keep up? But whether Tesla considers themselves to be a direct competitor to that company or not, I don't know. But that's kind of where the benchmark is, right? This company's kind of killing it right now. Like they just unveiled a 5-minute fast charging for EVs. I was shocked at how much wider attention in the media that got. It's coming out with a new luxury brand in Europe called Denza. It's like BYD's Lexus or something. It's considering a third factory in Europe, probably in Germany, like at a time when Germany's own car companies are like not doing great. It's really very quickly taking over the global south. Like sales are taking off in Latin America and Africa. And I bring this up to say that, you know, I think a lot of President Trump's tariff war and trade fight is predicated on the idea that the rest of the world wants American exports and needs American exports, including cars. And there's a chance that some of these trade partners could say, like, screw you guys, like we're going to find a new partner. And like BYD could be there to pick up the slack. Like they're doing so well and moving so fast. Like that could be the one that our car companies or even like the ones we know, like Toyota and them, that they could lose out to. There was this great article this week in my primary source of automotive news, which is the New York Post. Credit where it's due. They actually did a great job with the story, but like they talked about why this is, and they say that unlike its competitors, Shenzhen-based BYD manufactures its own electric batteries and is known for total vertical integration. 80% of its components are built in-house, and that means like BYD can control everything. You can control the prices. Like if it's going into like a trade war situation and needs to slash its prices by $10,000, whatever, it's like it's fine. Like you take the hit, but it can control all that and do it right away. Michael Dunn, who is one of the better analysts in this industry, he said that that's this company's quote-unquote superpower, their ability to just control the whole process and control their prices and do all of this stuff in-house. When every other car company, except for Tesla and the rest of the Chinese, depend on like all these outside parts suppliers, outside companies that make all the components that they assemble. And those are vulnerable to tariffs too. So the BYD's in a good position here. And, you know, I think the last thing to consider is that I still think there's a possibility that we could strike some trade deal with China. And part of that is like, okay, these car companies get to sell in America. Maybe they have to make a factory in Michigan or Ohio or Tennessee or whatever. But like, I could see that happening. And like, if so, that's good. It's American jobs, right? But that's also another really intense player coming in. That's not good news for Ford and GM and the rest. But that's a big if. Like, what's your read on all this, Tim?
I think that's definitely possible. We've talked about it before. I think it's more and more so, like, you know, I think we've seen that the Trump administration has this pretty, I don't know, narrow view of like what constitutes a win for trade. And I think whether or not BYD coming here would be awful for the domestic manufacturers, for our American car companies, like I could see this administration, you know, agreeing to that, being like counting that as a win of, you know, we're not going to bringing manufacturing to America. And I do think BYD could win out here. I think that like the big thing, and it's funny, like I'm learning more and more each day how bad these tariffs could be in various different ways. And one of them is that like, if you want to bring manufacturing to America, if you want to support foreign automakers and domestic companies building more factories in America, like you would want America to be a trustworthy trade partner, right?
Yeah.
And that's not what's happening here. What's happening is, because of all these tariffs, there's now reciprocal tariffs from other countries being slapped on America. And so, like, if you want to, and so, like, if you build something here, now it's going to be tariffed by Europe or something. You know, if you build a car in America and you want to ship it somewhere else, you're going to have tariffs on it. And so it's not actually creating an environment where, like, American manufacturing is going to flourish versus BYD.
Not right away, anyway. Not right away.
Yeah. Not necessarily right away. Yeah. And so it's turning into this situation where, like, America is now the country that's, like, kind of hard to trade with. And I can see that being an edge for BYD and these Chinese car companies where, like, you know, shipping cars between China and Europe now becomes, like, an easier proposition than trading with America.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a tough thing, too, because I do see both sides here. And it's like, if you're trying to bring jobs back, you're trying to reverse, you know, the damage done to the middle class and all the jobs lost to NAFTA. Like, some of this stuff, I do think it could have positive effects, just a question of when. But every time there's something like this, there's always winners and losers. And I think if a vacuum is created, that's where you see BYD in particular maybe being a winner. And that's why we continue to keep an eye on this car company.
Yeah, totally.
All right, now it's time for Plus Minus, where we pick out our winners and losers of the week. Or at least who's up and who's down. I don't want to be so mean as to call someone a loser. But who you got for me, Tim? Plus or minus?
We call people losers all the time on this show.
I try to be nice and polite, not call names.
Yeah. My minus this week is bikes, which is really sad because...
I've heard of it, yes. Go on.
I'm a lover of the bicycle. I think it's a great way to get around. Probably better than a car for most people. And this is one of those industries that is going to be absolutely destroyed by tariffs. Our friends at Heatmap News, which is a climate news publication, had a really good story out this week about how the bicycle industry is going to be, quote, flattened by Trump's tariffs. Again, since then, the situation has kind of changed. A lot of these tariffs are now paused for 90 days. But, like, the basic fact remains, which is that we don't really make bikes in America. All bikes, even if they come from an American brand like Specialized or Trek or whatever, they're generally made in Taiwan or China, especially if it's an electric bike. Like, a lot of those are coming from China. And right now, China has over 100% tariffs blanket on everything. And, like, I mean, it's just going to create a really tough situation for bike manufacturers, for buying a bike. Like, frankly, I was thinking about buying an electric bike this summer, and, like, it could be twice as expensive now, which is a really tough proposition. It's also bad for, like in general, you know, we don't talk a lot about it directly, but, like, EVs are a huge part of just, like, decarbonizing transportation, about getting your emissions down, about getting global emissions down. E-bikes are even better for that. It's a huge step in the right direction if more and more people can use, like, two wheels instead of four, and this is going to be really bad for that.
Yeah, man. Get Craigslist, baby. Facebook Marketplace. Get on that used e-bike market. That's all you got for now. I have a plus this week, and it's the Volkswagen Group. And like I said earlier, they actually had a really awesome result with electric vehicle sales in the first quarter. They doubled their EV sales in Europe and picked up apparently a lot of folks who were saying no to Tesla. 113% sales up in Europe, up 51% in the United States, which is really impressive considering that they don't, like, yet sell a ton of EVs in this country. So, I mean, like, hell yeah, Volkswagen. And that was sort of the original car company that's like, we're going to pivot to EVs. And they also kind of became the poster boy for how hard that is with the software challenges and the costs and the delays. And the, like, you know, their old CEO got fired because, like, it was such a hard process to deliver on that promise to people. So, you know, 10 years after Dieselgate, it's great to see them doing really well on that stuff finally too. So I say good on you, VW, and good luck with the tariff situation here in America. You guys got this. Maybe.
Let's hope.
Let's hope. Thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday as always. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and send us your questions about the EV world to podcast@insideevs.com. See you next time.
Thanks for listening.